watching the tornadoes and the storm chasers and stuff like that in the Midwest. I think those guys are much braver than I am. But it's a cool thing. But as far as that goes, we really don't have that out here. But the public safety thing is definitely a draw to me. And being a radio geek, it kind of goes hand in hand with being a ham operator as well.
But you have earthquakes.
We do have earthquakes, not as frequently as some people think. Up here in Northern California, I'm way up the coast, about 2 hours north of San Francisco. And earthquakes are very few and far between, and they're so minor half the time we don't even feel them. But it does give us an opportunity to exercise, the ham radio stuff and public safety stuff over the air for disaster drills and preparedness for the earthquakes. Matter of fact, just last Thursday we had a Tri-County mobile communications unit exercise where we, along with from the public safety side and the hams, all made contacts throughout Northern California and up into Oregon as if a disaster had happened, making quick contacts with other agencies and other ham operators.
Well, I know that, of course, if you live over in our part of the country, you think about the earthquakes on the West Coast. I don't guess there's much distinction. Of course, people on the West Coast think about all the tornadic activity here, tornadoes and whatnot. And we do have a fair amount of that. Of course, that's all over the Mideast. We have weather patterns here, obviously much different than out there. Your local club, tell me a little bit about field day or some of these things that you all may be interested in doing.
Well, I'm not really active with any of the local clubs just because I don't want to get sucked into that just because of my public safety side, being a firefighter. In an event of an emergency, I'm going to be responding with that group as opposed to a ham group. So I kind of have shied away from getting involved in that. But as far as field day, I actually head up a group that goes into a very remote location, and we run off generators and batteries and do the true field day thing where we're throwing wires up in the air. I think last year we had about a 450-foot wire loop strung up through oak trees right alongside a lake, and we turned it into a big family event. There's about a half dozen of us that go up there, and it's a really good event, and we operate under the Whiskey 6 Charlie Kilo November call sign, which is a club call sign for a radio group called the World Famous Chicken Net, which is also my buddy was a founding father of.
Well, very, very good. Listen, I appreciate you calling us and talking to us, and good hearing from you.
Yeah, thank you very much for getting me on, Ted. I appreciate it.
And hope to meet up with you again sometime soon.
Absolutely.
Thank you for calling.
No problem.
This is the QSO Radio Show. Some time ago, well, it hasn't been that long ago, we were doing a love song show on shortwave with a tremendous amount of response. One of the staples of that radio show that we played as a song was this one I'm about ready to play right now. And it's just very sad to hear the news of the passing of Whitney Houston. What a tremendous talent. And, of course, I'm kind of locked in a room here. There's no television or radio going other than what we're generating here. And so this was just handed me. I'm not really able to see emails and other things here, but I just learned of this. And I think it only fitting that we play this song in her memory. So very sad. We have lost Whitney Houston, and she was 47 years of age, so young, and so much talent. You're listening to QSO, and with me, I have someone on the phone here. Hello, and who am I speaking with?
Okay, hello, Ted. This is Hotel Radio 2 Delta Mike Radio, Dan from Honduras.
You're in Honduras. And how are you?
Sir, I'm calling you. Okay, I'm doing pretty fine. Really happy to receive the radio down here in Central America. Really happy to to hear amateur radio, you know, on broadcast. And congratulations for a great idea, Ted.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you listening. Tell me a little bit about yourself and your ham radio activities.
Okay, well, there is not so many amateur radio here in Honduras. I believe in the whole country there is about like 100 hands, like we normally call them. And there is just a few DXers. I believe there is just three of us here in Honduras. So every time you hear a Hotel Romeo call sign on the air, of course, there will be a pileup. So one of my friends introduced me to amateur radio and told me, you know, Daniel, if you like to make a lot of friends around the world, well, there is a good idea to get into amateur radio. So I took the test back in 2004. Then I got my first novice license as a Hotel Queen 2 DMR. Then I keep moving on and moving on into contesting CW, RTTY, you know, and the different type of activities you can have on amateur radio. With some years of experience, I get getting my first degree as the president of one of the oldest radio clubs here in Honduras. Then I just keep moving on and moving on. Now I'm holding the advanced license. I'm just missing two more steps, and I'm going to be on the top here in Central America. And to tell you the truth, I've been doing a lot of friends around the world. I'm able to speak about four languages already just through amateur radio, and that's a really, really good achievement from this hobby. But the most important is the bunch of friends you can have around the world. And I just want to congratulate you for this wonderful idea, you know, Ted. Back to you from Hotel Radio 2, Delta Mike Radio in Honduras.
All righty. Well, I really appreciate you you calling us. And how is our signal there? How are we coming in?
Well, I'm listening and it's 5085 kilohertz, and it's sounding pretty good, real, real nice. I have to install an antenna, especially for the frequency, because I have just monobanded for the high band. But it's working pretty nice. How much is the power you're running up there?
The transmitter is 100,000 watts, and that's into a rhombic antenna. And I guess with the antenna gain, we're probably up to 1,000,000 watts in ERP. But I, you know, we'd have to sit down and calculate that out. But it's a lot of power.
Yeah, well, and you are in Tennessee, right?
Yeah, we're just outside of Nashville in a city called Lebanon, and the radio transmitter is just right over the county line in Smith County, and it sits about maybe 15 to 18 miles from Lebanon. So we're that's where we're coming from. Now, what city are you in?
Well, I'm located in the city of El Progreso, like the word progress in English. You just have to add one at the very end, Progreso. That's my location, about 125 miles from the north coast of Honduras. Well, Ted, I will leave you. My battery is running low, and I don't want to be just without saying goodbye. My telephone is running real low. Thank you so much, Ted, for accepting my call, and congratulations. Hope you can do this more often. No?
All righty. Well, thank you so much for calling. A good hearing from you in 73.
Give us a call now at 615-547-9520 and share with a huge global radio audience. That's 615-547-9520. And now, back to the QSO Radio Show with Ted Randall.
We really appreciate you joining us, tuning in, and calling us on the phone, and sending us emails, and you're just too kind. I want to remind you, folks, you can join us on Facebook and also on Twitter. Twitter.com/QSO Radio Show on Facebook, just simply QSO Radio Show. And on the web at QSORadioShow.com. Who do I have on the phone with me here?
Hi, my name is Gilles. I'm in Montreal, Canada.
You're in Montreal?
Yeah, Montreal. And I'm a shortwave listener, so I'm not a ham radio operator. Thought many times that I could, but, well, you know, I enjoy listening, and, well, I'm listening to you now. I'm 5085 with a very good signal here in Montreal tonight.
Well, tell me a little bit about your shortwave hobby. When did you first get started listening to shortwave radio?
Well, I started listening back in 1982. I was about 13 years old back then. And my father came home with a radio that looked cool and fun. So I just started tuning around and hearing all those stations from all around the world. And I actually never stopped. I really enjoy it. I still enjoy it today. And I had many radios through the years. Now I'm using a ICOM ICR 8500 receiver.
So you stepped up quite a little bit there.
Yeah, well, I started off with a Realistic DX 100 that I bought at Radio Shack when I was 13. My father bought it when I was 13. And, well, I stepped up. I had a Kenwood R5000 for a long time. It died on me about 2 years ago. So I thought, well, you know, I enjoy the hobby. I should buy another good receiver. So I bought an ICOM.
So tell me, what are some of the exotic, which you would consider to be very rare stations, that you've caught on shortwave?
Well, most of those are probably those tropical band stations, you know, typical South American or Central American on the around 5 megahertz, 60 meter shortwave bands. Lots of African. I have many QSLs from some African stations that a lot of them are off the air now, and I cherish a lot those QSLs. And but I also like to listen to major broadcasters. I like to have the point of view of different countries. You know, sometimes we listen to our local media and we have this idea about what's happening in the world. But what I like about shortwave is that you have the idea of someone else. And sometimes all the different ideas make you realize that, interesting. Some people have a different point of view from mine. And that's what I love about shortwave.
You know, it's interesting, too, that folks that do not have the ability to listen to news on shortwave, I think, become very sheltered. And also, on top of that, I also think they become very biased, because they only hear one side of the story. And sometimes neither side of the story is totally right. The truth may lie somewhere in the middle. But without hearing it over shortwave, you would never know, because you're only going to get one side of the story. Do you find that to be the case?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And in all the years that I've been listening, I think it's something that I was fortunate to have a shortwave receiver and listen to all the news from all around the world. And when some major events happen, well, I think that, you know, the idea that I have might be less centered on, you know, like everybody thinks the same thing because everybody's listening to the same local stations or... And, well, you know, I get ideas from some other countries, and sometimes you say, okay, well, I think the truth is not totally what I'm hearing locally. It might not be what they're telling me in other countries also, because, you know, everybody, like, tells the story in their, the way that they it's going to be better for them, you know. And I think that what's interesting is that I can make my own idea of, well, okay, somewhere in the middle, there's an idea that I can see, and probably that's closer to the truth than just listening to one broadcaster.
Well, you know, I'll imbibe a little bit, and I'll ask the question, do you ever listen to the news coming from Havana?
Well, I do listen to Radio Havana, Cuba, a little bit. But I must say that I have a little difficulty in, you know, what's being said, and they have a lot of probably, you know, it's like listening to the voice of Korea from North Korea, you know, very centered on what's happening over there, and a little too much. I think there's what we have to be careful in radio is not to be, you know, too much to the extreme. And I think these are two examples of being a little too extreme of what we have to say about ourselves. And
I was listening on a couple of occasions, listening to Radio Havana, Cuba, doing news in English. I have to stop and say, they said what? They said, what is that they said? You know, but I will say this. Let me give them this, okay? And that is, when they make a presentation like that, it's dramatic enough to where if you've listened to the news here in the States and you hear the what you believe to be probably the truth of the story, when they deliver it, it'll about take you off your chair. You're sitting here like, what did they say? You know, but anyways, they've always got a pretty good signal. And some of their programming is pretty interesting, but I've caught news stories that are just, I mean, they're out there. But it's almost like watching a Saturday Night Live skit. You know, I mean, it gets that out there. And although I've never heard the North Korean station, I've never heard that news. Now, are they broadcasting news in English to us here?
Well, they have in the morning. I can receive them here. Well, the kind of news that you'll have from North Korea is what's happening with Kim Jong Il and whatever, or his son, and how they are some like these supreme beings that, you know, it's almost like God. So most of the North Korean broadcast centers around that, with music that actually, the music itself is written and tells stories about how the great leader makes these heroic things through the country and through the world. So it's sad in a way, because, you know, you think about all the millions that are left in the dark and don't know what's happening outside. But
that's true. You know, one of the things that was very interesting in talking with the folks at the Texan Radio Company, they were telling me that a good portion of China is not on the power grid. So a lot of battery-operated shortwave radios are the only gateway, you know, into those folks' homes. So they tune in and hear things, and that would explain, a lot of them want to learn English. The Texan said don't broadcast in, you know, Mandarin or any of those particular dialects, you know, that the English is something that they want to hear. So a lot of times I think we operate with misconceptions that way. But I tuned in Radio China International one night, and I understand they're leasing some transmitters, I guess, in Canada there somewhere. Are they not? Are they not on a couple of shortwave or a shortwave station up in Canada? At least that's what I was told. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. That may not be true. But they did a radio special on Marco Polo, and it was absolutely incredible. I mean, it was produced. It was it was just good. It held me spellbound through the entire presentation. And the only place I hear things like that are here in the United States. I hear on public radio sometimes. So the NPR stuff, they'll produce things that's that good. But when you get off of NPR, you get back into standard AM and FM, well, you know, it's just kind of like, you know, I don't know what they're thinking. I don't know if there's any thought really put into any of that. But anyhow, well, what's the favorite listening that you have? What do you listen to, and what do you enjoy the most?
Well, I listen to a lot of stuff. I'm kind of, because, you know, some people like major broadcasters. Some people like listening to utility and ham radio. I'm a little, you know, all through that spectrum. I love, in an evening of listening, I will enjoy listening to some major broadcasters, you know, like Radio Romania and the BBC. Even though they don't broadcast to North America, I will still listen to the BBC on the evening. There's a couple of frequencies that come in pretty well here. I will also listen to some ham radio stations. I enjoy, actually, even though I'm not a ham, one thing that I do enjoy is listening to exotic countries with some ham radio that on 10 meters or 15 meters, you know, 28 megahertz or 21 megahertz band. I really enjoyed that. The other day I was listening to a station from Norway, and another one I heard, and I even do some digital stuff on my computer. I listened a couple of months back to a teletype, a ham radio teletype from Greenland. And I enjoy, say, what really makes me enjoy the listening is when it's from far away, especially when it's from some country that I rarely hear. And what I would say that I feel sad now is the fact that a lot of countries are leaving shortwave. And I understand that, you know, budget cuts and shortwave does cost a lot of money. Yet, you had a very interesting point talking about those radios. You know, that a lot of people are still in regions where sometimes it's difficult to either listen to local broadcast, or you have these, lots of Africans that don't have necessarily power, 24-hour electricity in their home, you know, and they'll have these radios, these crank radios that you can power up and still listen. So for a few bucks, you can listen to the world. And I think a lot of the countries today are missing the point that, well, you can listen to the world with a radio that costs $50. And yes, you can listen to the world on internet, but if something really important happens, a war or whatever, a country can easily cut the internet, and you can be left in the dark because there's no more information from the internet. Yet, shortwave is different. Yes, you can put some transmitters to try and block other stations, but you cannot do that job 100%. There's always a portion of outside broadcast that still come in to these countries. So there's always someone listening.
Absolutely. And I said earlier, the only entities that would cut back and shut down shortwave radio would be a government. It's not, private enterprise or somebody that has, a half wit about them would not even consider it, especially with the penetration of shortwave radio today. I mean, the penetration of shortwave radio out in the world is incredible compared to what it used to be. And the other thing, I mean, I'll just go on record. I think the whole idea of here in the United States, them shutting down Voice of America, it's criminal. It's criminal, and only a politician could come up with that. You know, an average thinking, functional human being would not even think about that, because you have the opportunity, have such an opportunity there to present the culture of your country, present the history of your country, present who you are to groups of people all around the world that maybe would have absolutely no other means, you know, of finding out who you are, who the United States is, who is Canada, who are these folks, where'd they all come, what is it like today in your country? What is the day-to-day life of the typical Canadian citizen, typical citizen here in the U.S.? You know, and this golden opportunity to present ourselves to the rest of the world. You've got, I can't speak for the Canadian government because I don't live there, but here in the U.S. I can. We've got people in Washington, D.C. I think if you look in one ear, you could see light from the other side of their head. It's just not a good thing. I think the whole idea, Voice of America, I remember visiting the Bethany, Ohio station back years ago when it was operational. It was phenomenal. You know, and when you would consider, when you walked through that place and you saw the pictures of all the people who had been behind the microphones of Voice of America and all the history and all the culture that had passed through that transmitting facility, as well as Greenville and as well as the one out in California. You know, you begin to realize, now this is legacy. This is like piece of American history. This is part of world history. And yet you've got empty heads in Washington saying, oh, let's shut it down and take a wrecking ball to it. And you see those towers being blown up. I know they've got pictures of them up on the Internet. Insanity. Just plain crazy. Gone to seed. So anyways, one of these days I'll express my opinion.
The major problem, I think, with that is the fact, like here in Canada, we've had in the past twice the closure of Radio Canada International, and we had to fight to keep it up. And the problem often that happens is that they're cutting budgets, and those people don't understand what that station, it's like the Voice of America for the United States. Well, they're talking about us to the rest of the world, and it's important to keep that, because nobody will talk about Canada somewhere else if Radio Canada International doesn't stay on the air. And the other thing is that for the public, like here in Canada, most people don't even know that Radio Canada International exists. But if you tell the same people that actually travel around the world, they will tell you that, well, you know, I have a shortwave receiver and I like Radio Canada International because it gives me news of home. And
absolutely. And the other thing, too, it's just like yourself. When you tune the shortwave radio in and you're listening to a station in Romania, you know, you're listening to that and you're wanting to know something. You're wanting to learn a little bit about what's going on over there. What are they all about? You know, what do they do on a daily basis? What, you know, I mean, it's just only natural. You know, and shortwave is the absolute natural media for this. This is the medium of choice for that. One transmitter can cover an entire continent, cover an entire hemisphere. And, you know, they can talk about it being expensive, but now from a government standpoint, it's the most cost-effective thing they could have. But that's what, you know, we're beating a dead horse is what we're doing, talking to the, yeah, preaching to the choir.
Exactly.
So, well, listen, go ahead.
One question I would have, just because I was curious about it, and I would like to ask this question about your station, is how does, you know, what idea came up, or what actually came up to make the idea of WTWWN deciding to start it and put it on shortwave?
Well, the owner of this station is a fellow by the name of George McClintock. George is a radio amateur, and we had him on earlier, and we were talking, and he just has an interest in radio, has an avid interest in shortwave radio. He started the facility WCR. In Nashville, which has been very successful in their run, mostly Christian and religious programming, and he just had an interest in it. I think what happens is, I think you just have this interest that's within you, and he decided he was going to pursue that, and that's what this is all about. The one thing that's very interesting, I think, about this station is we have one frequency, which is 12.1. And on that frequency is the Bible in about 10 different languages being broadcast 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And, of course, it takes a desire, a commitment, and inspiration to want to pull something like that off, because it's very expensive to run these things. I mean, I've said that more than once tonight, you know, because a lot of people kind of wonder what dictates the programming you put on. Well, a lot of it is, you know, how do you pay for the electricity? So, and the parts. I mean, my goodness, a final tube in one of these transmitters is just astronomical price-wise. I mean, you have to have a forklift to take it out of the transmitter. You know, and they're just, everything's expensive. But George has had a vision. You know, he's had a vision for shortwave radio. He has a tremendous love for shortwave radio, and he's been very good at it, because not only has he put stations on the air, but he's also managed to be able to keep them stations afloat. And there's been a lot of shortwave stations that's come and gone. I mean, there's a lot of them gone off the air, gone dark. And it's like I've said before, there's a lot of them that stay on the air but have to reduce their power to real low levels just to be able to pay the bills. And, you know, he's never really had to do that. And, of course, when you can, you put as much interesting programming as you can afford to put on a station. You know, after you get the bills paid and make the thing kind of break even, then you add programs in. You put people like Glenn Hauser on. You put things like QSO on. And it just, you know, makes the world a better place, I guess. That's Does that answer your question?
Oh, absolutely. And I find it interesting, and I hope you keep up the work. And, of course, I will be listening to your station. That's for sure. And hope to have more of these programs where people call in. It's always interesting also to see that the others are listening, because radio is a solitary thing. So it's like you're alone, you're in front of your radio, but, you know, there's a lot of people listening also, but you don't see them. So a program like this, what shows is like, well, tonight I'm not alone. There's a lot of other people listening.
Well, it's kind of funny, too, when you're on this end. You know, you're sitting in a little room behind a microphone, you know, and you're wondering, is there anyone out there? You know? So a show like this does open that up. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it. You have a good evening, and hope to talk to you again sometime soon.
Okay, take care.
Give us a call now at 615-547-9520 and share with a huge global radio audience. That's 615-547-9520. And now, back to the QSO Radio Show with Ted Randall.
QSO Radio Show it is. We're just getting lots of email here now. I've just noticed a fellow listening in Long Island, New York. And my email app just closed. Always something. Is it not always something? Anyhow, I'll get to that in a minute. We do have folks. Let's see. Somebody handed me this. And let's see what this is here. Guy McDonald, K4GTM in Savannah, Georgia. N2YGI from Greece listening. Also, let's see here, Southern Ohio, KD8CHP, and let me see, is there somebody else I'm missing here? KK0HF. Different call signs here that we've got. This just handed me. And we have this gentleman on the telephone, and he's, believe it or not, folks, he's at Hamcation in Florida. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Ted. How are you tonight?
Well, we're getting along. We really are. A lot of phone calls, a lot of folks, of course, having a lot of fun doing this. Tell me a little bit about your ham radio career before we get into Hamcation. And I understand, according to what you told me here just as we answered the telephone, you're a veteran radio broadcaster. So let's hear about all this.
Well, if it weren't for shortwave radio and QSL and actually the Boys Life SWL contest back in the 50s, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing, where I'm at, and talking to you right now. I began my ham radio career as a result of a Boy Scout merit badge project in 53-54. Got my passed my novice test in December 53. I began as WN9GMH in Dollars Grove, Illinois. Got my license in January 54. And then I went to do another part of the merit badge, was to visit a radio station. So I visited a brand-new 500-watt daytimer in LaGrange, Illinois. And when I left WTAQ, Pappy Salter said, Cullen, here are some coverage maps and rate sheets and contracts. Why don't you go out to Downers Grove and sell some sponsors, and you can have a radio show.
And I guess you must have done that.
I went to the theater where I was an usher. I sold the manager a 15-minute show for $16 a week for 13 weeks. I went to the Owens dealer where I washed cars, and I sold him 15 minutes for $16. So there was $32 in revenue. The station got 20, and I got the difference. And what it was is the station operated with a lot of people who were freelancers who went out and sold their time and got to do their radio shows.
Well, what kind of what programming did you do? What did you do on that show?
At that time, we played music. One thing I knew when I sold the guy at the theater that show, I said, a part of my job as the head usher was to put up the marquee on Thursday night on the Tivoli Theater, and that theater is still there in downtown Downers Grove. And I knew that in the media kit that the movie company would send, there was all of this stuff that you used to take to the newspaper. Back then it was, you know, lead letterpress type of thing, so you had these mats to make up the newspaper ad. So he taught me how to lay out the newspaper ad. But there was also a record that most all of the movies, there would be a record included that had an interview with the movie star. And one side of it was somebody in Hollywood doing the interview, you know, with a voice like yours, and I guess like I think mine is now. And but on the other side of it was what we call open-ended. All you had was a cut of the artist or the movie star, one spiral groove, and then it slipped over, and you could slip slide it on the turntable on that nice green film, and you had a copy of the script. So my very first radio show, I interviewed Susan Hayward from the movie I'll Cry Tomorrow. And it just went on from there to where eventually I even got to interviewing real live artists, you know. I went and bought me a Webcore wire recorder at a trade at an old antique place, and my stepdaddy's daddy was an engineer at WTMJ AM/FM/TV Milwaukee, and he helped me build a little console on a Masonite board. I had two turntables and my Webcore recorder, and he gave me some old Shure microphone, I think, and I practiced being a disc jockey in my bedroom.
Oh boy. So
I've been doing it ever since. I've been doing it 57 years now. And so, I still go sell ads and still do commercials and do news. And as my boss man says, do whatever you want to do.
And now, where do you do that currently?
Currently, I live in Crestview, Florida. I'm the what they call the general sales manager and kind of one of the news for. We have three full-time and three part-timers. And technically, for the paperwork, I'm one of the part-time people. But I'm the only salesperson. We have 100 kilowatt FM and a 5 kilowatt AM.
Well, there you go. Yeah, radio is like something that once it gets a hold of you, you know.
It does.
You're gone. That's it. It's all over.
I got out of it from 80 to 84. I was the manager and part owner of WCKZ in Austell, Georgia, out on the west side of Atlanta. Sold it in 84 and had a non-compete. And I didn't want to move away from the nice townhouse I had bought on the banks of the Chattahoochee River, so I wound up with a marketing company doing vacation incentive award programs. Did that from 84 to 96, 2000, really. Then retired, and along the way I learned to edit video and that kind of stuff and do video production for the travel business and got to do cruises and get paid to go on them and shoot video. But I found a little couple of radio stations up in the panhandle of Florida where I was going to retire back at the end of 2000. And I knew they were what you and I would call sick, and they needed a radio doctor. And when I called up the guy that owned them, he said, "Son, I don't need a radio doctor. What I'm looking for is a radio funeral director." He was going to turn in the keys from his lease management, and I convinced him I could handle the financing for 90 days and keep them going. And we turned them around and made them make money. Then I met the guy that has this 100 kilowatt, made him an offer. "I want to buy your station." He said, "I'll put you on the waiting list." So I'm on the waiting list. There's a couple of other people ahead of me. And the nice thing of it is we have a half-wave antenna for the AM frequency. It's a 466-foot vertical. Where we are, we're a C1. You know what that is. You know, we're 100 kilowatt. We could have a 2,000-foot stick. But there's this big Air Force base down there, or up there from where I'm at now. And nobody has anything that exceeds 500 feet above ground level.
Wow.
Because of the low flight missions that's a big test base up there. So, but our advantage is that the base of our tower starts at 250 above sea level. All the rest of the transmitters in our market are down at the south end of the county by the beach. So they're non-directional, so guess where the south half of their signal is? Out in the Gulf of Mexico. Not a lot of commuters out there. And we have, so therefore we have 230 feet on the average height advantage above average terrain. So our signal covers South Alabama and all of Northwest Florida.
Okay, and I'm gonna ask you a question before we talk about hand occasion. What do you think is wrong now? You know, we hear all these stories, all these big radio companies, you know, they're all having financial difficulties, they're all operating on borrowed money. What's the problem? What do you think the problem is?
Well, that's real simple. They all overextended, overexpanded. Granted, they cut down overhead. You know, hey, there was a day when guys like you and I were general managers, and there were 10 stations. There were maybe an AM-FM combo at the best in the market, you know. You couldn't have but one of each in the market, and you couldn't overlap your adjacent signals you own by more than 25% of your coverage areas. Now one guy will sit with Clear Channel and Cumulus and Quantum and the other big boys. They've got bunches, but they've got such debt. I mean, I know that I'm not going to name a name, but one of the big companies bought 4 FMs and an AM in our market, and they got a $35 million mortgage. Now, what kind of billing have you got to do to pay your staff and pay the principal and interest on $35 million?
Well, see, I wonder, I say to myself, the debt service on that has got to exceed the income potential, period.
Yeah, I mean, in our case, I feel fortunate. We are a standalone, single ownership. The man who owns it is in his 80s now. He works. He'll be on the air tomorrow from 7 a.m. to he does the morning. And we call ourselves the good country. We play Willie and Waylon and June and Johnny and Jack and George. And we play current stuff and a lot of new stuff. You know, we get new CDs and we play new artists, but we probably are 70% oldies. But we do local news 5 times a day. We do the obituaries in our local newscast. When I cover a city council meeting, I may email a story into my news guide that may be 7-8 minutes long. And our owner's philosophy is we're the only one that's got that. The local paper comes out on Wednesday and Saturday, and their Wednesday morning paper is printed Monday afternoon. Council meets Monday night. If you die at 10 o'clock Monday morning, your obituary will not be in that local paper till Saturday. You'll be in the ground by then.
Oh, goodness. Well,
so local radio, and because he built the AM in 1954 when he was about 20, and the AM started out on 1490, 250 watts on a little 250-foot tower. Then he had an FM in 64, which was a Class A 3-kilowatter. Then eventually got up to 30, then 100,000, and then moved the AM up to a 5-kilowatt. Then when we went to the half-wave tower to give the FM height, they couldn't get beyond 500 feet because of the Air Force deal. So the FM's got a 10-bay antenna sitting at up there at the 466. Now, 2 weekends from now, I will use that tower for the third year in a row to compete in the CQ Worldwide 160 contest.
Oh, my goodness. I bet you'll have a signal.
Oh, listen, I've been number one in Florida for the last 2 years. Last year, I was number two in the 4-call area, number 7 in the U.S., and number 11 in North America in single-operator low power. So the hams are listening, and you know what that means.
So let me guess. You're telling them you're running QRP on an 80-meter G5RV, right?
No, I tell them the truth. In fact, that first year I did it, now, on Sunday, the boss man doesn't put the station on the air till 7 o'clock. And on Sunday morning, we don't play country. He plays Billy Vaughn, Montavani, Percy Faith, you know, pretty Frank Sinatra, Sarah Vaughn. And when I first asked him, why do you do that? He said, look, I grew up in this town. The people I grew up with on their way to church and Sunday school don't need to hear our regular whiskey-drinking, women-chasing music.
Oh, that's
so we play the. Does he play that pretty stuff?
Does he play any Burt Kempford?
Yes.
Oh, I just
man. Wonderland by Night, Burt Kempford, was a theme song I remember using way back in my disc jockey days.
Well, tell me now, what are you doing at Hamcation?
Well, of course, this is probably, from what I understand, the second largest ham fest in America, Dayton being the biggest. And so I brought 2 other hams down with me. I belong to a club called the North Okaloosa Amateur Radio Club. Anybody out there wants to check out our ham club. If you're in North Florida, South Alabama, W4AAZ.org is the club. And that's something, Mr. Whitaker, the owner of the radio station, donated a tower site 30 years ago to these guys who wanted to start a ham club. And he still does. He gives them the top spot on one of his, besides the radio stations, he owns two cell phone towers in town. One's 250 and one's 270. They're these big, fat saber towers. And so one of our repeaters, the 3-6 machine, is at the very top of one tower. We have our D-Star stack on that tower, which has got 2 meters, 440, 1.2 gig, and a 2.4 gig internet relay. We feed the internet from our SysOps house, by connect to his router, and send a signal with one of those ubiquity bullets up to the 150-foot level on that 250-foot tower. So, but he lets me use the AM tower for the 160 contest. In fact, I just bought a bunch of goodies. Now, Hamcation is a ham fest. This is the big one. Today, without a doubt, the parking lot at the fairgrounds down here, and this is my fifth year to come to the thing, this was the biggest I've seen. And, I mean, it was packed. Every vendor I talked to during the day was having gangbusters business. And I bought, my share of goodies. I got 500 feet of number 10 copper wire insulated. Next Saturday, I'm putting up a great big inverted L, hanging it off of the broadcast tower. Because last year, Sunday morning, finally got a few Europe stations on 160. I worked a guy in Poland, Scotland, and London. And all three of them said, why aren't you answering all these stations from Europe who are calling you? Well, I wasn't hearing them on that vertical. So now I'm going to have me an inverted L, and one of my buddies, you know what EasyNIC is, that software to calculate, what your antenna will do? And we finally figured, I've got a tree that's about 300 feet away from the tower at the far corner of our 8-acre land that the station sits on. I was going to put a beverage up. I thought that would help me, but beverages don't work good on a good ground system. That's not where you want a beverage. So instead, I'm going to put this inverted L, which will give me about a 6 dB gain at a 10-degree angle shooting to Europe. So maybe I will hear Europe, and maybe I will get these Q-cells and multipliers. My goal is to be number one USA single operator low power.
Oh, there you go.
I made number seven this last year. So maybe if I get enough European multipliers, I might can get there.
What do you see at Hamcation? That's interesting so far. What have you...
Of course, the stuff that we have today compared to the stuff that we had when I began... I got my ham ticket, like I said, in 1954. I was fortunate enough to have to meet a man who changed the world as we know it today in electronics, Dr. William Shockley. You know what he did?
Tell us what he did.
He was hired by Bell Labs in 1938, and in 1949, he and Dr. Bartain and Dr. Britton co-invented the transistor.
And
September, huh?
And a lot of folks would say, "And what is that?"
What is a transistor?
Well, no, in the day and time that we live with all the other solid state devices. But go ahead, this is interesting. We want you to tell this.
Well, the background to that is my granddaddy. Who passed away in the 70s, but he was born in 1889, wound up with an EE doctorate in 1909 and went to work for Bell Labs, like a lot of other doctorate EE guys did back then. I think my granddad said in his group there were 10 graduates at the University of Nebraska that year. His roommate took some job with some unknown little company in Schenectady, New York, that generated electricity called the General Electric Power Generating Company. And that guy retired as the president of GE. My granddad and the other nine guys all wound up with Bell Labs. Well, in 38, one of my granddaddy's jobs was to go out to colleges with other Bell guys to recruit bright young graduates. And he was proud and had a photograph he shared with me that he was the man that recruited Dr. Shockley out of MIT to Bell Labs. And in 49, the year my granddaddy retired, in December, well, in spring of that year, AT&T announced the invention of the little, single stage, what I guess we would have called a 1N2 transistor. And in 53, Dr. Shockley was retiring. He moved to California and created Shockley Laboratories. That became Beckman Instruments. Today, the name of that company is called Intel. That name, I guess, people today know.
I think they do.
I've got an i7 Intel chip in my notebook sitting right here on my desk here in the hotel room right now.
You know, I want to ask you, do you recall, though, when the transistor became consumer, in other words, it reached the consumer, and how the face of everything changed once the transistor was actually unleashed and marketed?
Well, of course, when we had a low-voltage, low-current switching device and an amplifying device, and, it didn't take long into the 50s to when this now made a radio from that big cabinet. When I did my shortwave listening contest in February of 53, I had one of these great big old cabinet radios that my stepdaddy had, and his brother, the radio engineer, fixed up a headset jack so I could sit there with headset, and I finished in the top 10, I think, in the Boys Life contest that year, because I could, you know, sit there and log and send my QSL cards out. And man, did we get all that propaganda from the shortwave stations, and particularly the Radio Moscow and Czechoslovakia and all that stuff. They wanted to get you on their mailing list. But the transistor was that stepping stone. Now, in the September 53, I think it was, Dr. Shockley was doing the visits, and the club met at a cottage out in the suburbs of Chicago, and there were a lot of Bell people that were in that club, and I was sitting next to a guy named Art Hacker. He was the chief engineer for WMAQ AM FM TV Chicago, which was the big NBC station. And Dr. Shockley drew two circles on the blackboard, a line across the middle of them, and one of them had an arrow from the circle to the base, and one had an arrow from the flat line to the circle. He said, PNP, peeing in the pot, NPN, not peeing in the pot.
That's good.
And then he held one of those little things up. It was about the size of your little fingernail, and he said, this little thing is going to change the world as you men and boys know it tonight. What has that stepping stone done?
You know, I'll tell you, to kind of add to your story, when I was very, very little, I talked earlier to a fellow who was doing restore work on old radios, and I mentioned we had a floor-standing Stromberg Carlson AM FM with two FMs on it, FM 1 and FM 2. I believe it had shortwave on it and a 78 RPM record player.
Wow.
And it was huge. I mean, that was the way it was, you know. But as I was a little, my dad put me in the car one day, and he says, I'm going to take you somewhere. We're going to get something for you. And I said, what are we going to get? So he took me to into Dearborn, Michigan. I was raised in that area. And he went to a jewelry store, of all places, and bought me one of the very first transistor radios. And I remember the thing, I think it was a True Tone or something like that. You could hold it, you know, right in the palm of your hand. And I had never seen anything like that before. And
what year would that have been?
Boy, I have no idea.
When were you in high school?
I graduated in 1969. This had to be probably, what, 1957, 56.
Yeah,
I don't know when.
You probably were in grade school then. Okay.
Yeah. When did the transistor radio hit big? What year would that have been? When everybody said, "Wow, transistor radios."
I'm going to guess. I mean, and I shouldn't remember that, but I mean, 53 is when they weren't. There was not a transistor radio in the fall of 53, because that night at that club meeting, Dr. Shockley gave some of the guys some of the transistors. And they built a little transistor radio that was a germane dial tuner. Now, where we lived, WCFL was out there in Downers Grove with three great big tall towers and 50 kilowatts on 1,000 kilohertz, as we called it back, kilocycles back then. And you could hear that thing. I lived about half a mile from the tower, so I had a frequency marker all the way up to 2 meters. It was a perfect frequency marker for every place you wanted to go on the band dial. It was there. The harmonics did not go away. But anyway, they built this thing that had a lantern battery and a little permanent magnet speaker, the little transistor for the audio amplifier, And we took that, some of the guys in the club, the junior operators, us high school guys, took it to school the next day, and we taught our classmates. We were high school freshmen, sophomores, 53 sophomores, and we taught them in our science class what a transistor was and how it worked, and we were probably the first high school kids in the world to learn about transistors that week.
I don't know what year this was, but I do remember the thing about that radio was is you could put it under your pillow and you could tune in WLS, WCFL. You could, you know, of course, in the Detroit area, there was WJBK, WXYZ.
WKR.
Yeah. WKMH at the time wasn't Keener yet. And, of course, CKLW. And you could tune those things in. You could listen, you know, all night long with that transistor radio under your pillow, and no one would know that you were listening to these radio stations. That's just absolutely amazing. And, are you buying anything at Hamcation? Are you making any major purchases there?
Oh, yeah. I bought what's called a DB dongle. You know what D-Star radio is?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, I've got a D-Star mobile in my car, and I've got a D-Star HT. Now I bought one of the little D-Star, it's called an access point, so I can plug it into the computer and then walk around with my HT. And if I take the little antenna with that little SMA connector and connect it to a feed line, one of my buddies did this before we got our repeater in Crestview. He had a one of these DVAPs at his house, access points, and had an antenna about 40 feet up on a little mast. And I could work it from my mobile driving around in the daytime while I'm doing sales and news calls, and I'd be talking to guys. I'd have a customer. I said, hey, there's somebody else in Australia. Let's talk to them right now. You know, and they'd go bonkers. I'm sitting in my car talking to somebody in London or Australia or Japan, you know, with on a car radio. But I bought one of those. For this 160-meter contest, that what I'm going to do next Saturday, I'm going to put up what's called an inverted L, which is going to be it's a big, long wire that's going to go up 140, 50 feet on the tower and then go out about 290 and go over a tree to support it. And so I can, since I found a good relay from one of the vendors, MFJ makes it, so when I key the transmitter, whether I push the button to send CQ or hit the foot mic button, it will switch me to the transmit antenna, which will be the tower. Then it'll go back to the receive antenna, which will be the inverted L, so I hope I'm going to hear signals better on that. I bought a piece of the new version of the software for Ham Radio Deluxe. The guy who now owns it, who had bought it from Simon out of Europe, he was at one of the seminars, so I bought the upgraded version of Ham Radio Deluxe. Bought a neat little 7-inch monitor, which really, what it is, it's a portable LCD TV from the Sharper Image. Got that for $90. But I can plug that into my ICOM 7000 and have a much bigger display than the little tiny display on the on that little ICOM 7000 screen.
Wow. Well, listen, I want to what is your call sign again?
W4GMH is my current call. In 1954, I was Whiskey November 9 GMH as a novice.
Well, I want to tell you something. I really appreciate you calling in tonight and talking to us. This has been extremely interesting. You're down there in Florida, and you're playing classic country. I'll just ask you this question: have you ever ran across a fellow by the name of Jack Blanchard?
Yes, my twin daughter was named for Misty.
Really,
Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan. When I was in Orlando. I worked in Orlando at the old WKIS when Susquehanna owned it. I was a newsman and weekend nighttime DJ. I did news for WFTV Channel 9 in Orlando. I was lucky enough to move here in 69. I covered all of the moon launches for Channel 9 from 69 to 72.
Well, the reason...
And the thrill of it, huh?
Go ahead.
And one of those thrills in 69, when Neil Armstrong was taken off to go to the moon, that granddaddy, my daddy died when I was a baby, and I was just a little baby back in the late 30s when he passed away. But anyway, so I spent a lot of time with my father's parents, more than my step-parents, and my stepfather and his parents. But anyway, the grandpa who worked for Bell Labs and AT&T and eventually Western Electric in Chicago, he made some inventions, one of which I've got a copy of his patent that he did in 42, change the world of the little tiny light bulbs that are in telephones and switchboards.
Oh, that's
and a, the, that, his light bulb didn't screw in. It had a little tiny bayonet points on the bottom.
Well, you know, we're gonna run along, but I ask you about Jack Blanchard because I didn't know, and you and now this,
I don't know whether he's still around. Of course, Tennessee Birdwalk was their big hit.
Yeah,
Jack Blanchard and Misty Morgan.
That is correct, and with that, I want to say thank you so much for calling. Your stories have been absolutely incredible. I hope to meet up with you again sometime soon. And
you're in the Nashville area.
I'm in the Nashville area. That's correct.
Okay.
So I'll tell you something. The world today is so full of things that make us sad and make us, depressed and all that. I'm going to give this song a whirl. I had it queued up next to play, but I wanted to ask you because you were in Florida if you happen to know Jack, and this is one of my favorite songs of all time.
Give us a call now at 615-547-9520 and share with a huge global radio audience. That's 615-547-9520. And now, back to the QSO Radio Show with Ted Randall.
I want to say a special hello out there to Mike Erickson, who is with the Wheatstone Corporation. I was hoping to have Mike get on with us here and talk a little bit about audio processing, but for some reason, I don't know why, something's gone crazy with the telephone trying to get a hold of him. That has not worked out very well. On the phone with me here, I've got a gentleman, and I'd like to say hello to you. And where are you listening at?
I'm listening from way up here in Halifax, Canada, up in Nova Scotia.
There you go. And
the East Coast.
How are we coming in up there?
In and out. I just started listening to shortwave very recently, actually. And in the few weeks that I've been listening, this is the first time that I've been able to pick you guys up.
Really? Well, this transmitter has not been on before.
really?
Yeah, that might explain why.
The name of this
radio show is This Is Only a Test.
Roger out.
And what we're doing basically is they were wanting to test the transmitter, and we said, well, hey, let's just put QSO on and get hams and shortwave listeners from all over to call in and talk about the hobby of amateur radio and shortwave listening. So that's what this is all about. And so
as far as amateurs go, I think I'm about as amateur as they get.
Okay.
I just bought my first shortwave radio very recently, and it was more out of curiosity, I think, than anything else. I had been surfing around on the net, and I was in broadcasting at one point. I worked for a CTV affiliate out on the west coast of Canada, and in television as a news cameraman. I worked at a local AM radio station while I was at college, and decided to go to television instead. Now that I'm in my mid-30s and I got a wife and a kid, and the idea of hobbies is coming around, I said, why not pick up a shortwave radio and see what there is to hear? And surprise, surprise, there's a lot.
And here we are.
And here we are, yeah. So, Nashville, you guys said you just put this radio tower on. Tell me a little bit about where this station is going to be going.
Okay, well, this one here, we didn't put a new radio tower up. We are we're just outside of Nashville. If you look on the map, you'll find Lebanon, Tennessee, and the radio station, WTWW, is about maybe 15 miles to the east of Lebanon. And currently there are three radio transmitters there, each one of them 100,000 watts, and there are three full-size rhombic antennas, and there's fire coming out the chute, okay?
No doubt. Who shovels the coal into the bottoms of those transmitters to make them to put out that much heat?
The gentleman that is the, I guess I want to say, the brains and elbow grease behind the whole thing is a fellow by the name of George McClintock. He's a radio amateur. Call sign is Now watch that. My mind. I've been doing this for too long. K4BTY, and he's had an avid interest in shortwave and in HF communications going back to his childhood. So he is just as diseased as the rest of us, you know. And so this is his brainchild. We're testing this thing to see how it's doing. So far, it's been very impressive. The signal has been just incredible in places that we never... And we're getting where people are trying to call in. A lot of folks are getting, busy signals and whatnot, but we are getting a lot of email. And I do want to take this time to encourage people, if you've been listening to the broadcast, be sure and send us an email. Just simply go to QSOradioshow.com. There's a place where you can email. Put on your email. I want to win, because we're going to be giving away some things, and hopefully that'll work out really well. Go ahead.
Sorry, I got to tell you, a few of your previous callers touched on a couple of interesting points with regards to the nature of shortwave today, especially over in developing countries like Africa and parts of Asia, where access to electricity isn't as widespread as it is here in North America, where especially my generation and younger, we've sort of become consumed with the internet and its ability to get news to us very quickly, get lots of information to us very quickly, and I've always been amazed at our willingness to latch on to that medium without giving much regard to its fragility, to how easy it is for that, or how much technology is necessary in order to make it all work, if you know what I mean. You got to have companies that are willing to maintain optical networks and then sell that off to ISPs, who can then branch that off to everybody's household, and then you've got to have these massive server farms running all around the country, and there's a lot of things that have to go right for it all to work. And it wouldn't take much for that system to just sort of disappear. And in the span of one generation, a medium like shortwave that has gone from being fairly popular, a fairly robust way of getting a message across this continent, North America, has all but disappeared from the common vocabulary. And the few friends that I've mentioned my new hobby to sort of give me a funny look when they hear me say I listen to shortwave. It's actually really cool. They've never heard of it. They have no idea what the rest of the world has access to, and what a robust way of getting that message around the world it really is. And I'm a little bit disappointed, because I was hoping to hear the BBC World Service when I bought my radio, only to find out, of course, they're no longer broadcasting in North America. And to me, that seems really sad.
Radio China is.
They sure are. And they have a nice, strong, healthy feed right near where I live.
And Radio Havana, Cuba is still broadcasting to the United States.
On the 6,000 kilohertz, I can pick them up every once in a while.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it is. It's a form of something. I don't know what it is. But, I had mentioned this earlier, and I don't know if you heard this, but Radio Shack. I discovered this by talking to the people at TechSun in Beijing. And I had several long conversations with these people. And absolutely, totally amazing to hear them describe the market in terms of shortwave. And the gentleman told me, he says, all your Radio Shack stores carry all of, four or five models of our radios. They make Eton, they make Grundig, they make, I don't know.
That's right.
All of them.
If you search around on the internet and at those different models, you'll realize that they're all from Texan. They put different stamps on them and off
and, they go. And Texan has, if you look at their website, they have all these young people dressed in white uniforms and lab coats sitting in front of these soldering stations as far as the eye can see inside this building. They have dormitories You know, these young people live in the dorms, you know, and they work there. I mean, I was impressed. They had several pictures of, they sent me of their public, some sort of a special event where they all had this big dinner and different employees of the Texon company performed on stage and all that. It was really, very impressive. But the thing that got me was every little Radio Shack store, I don't care where they're at. I mean, in the smallest cities in the U.S., they all carry at least four models of shortwave radios. And Radio Shack is one of those kind of companies that doesn't stock something if it isn't selling.
That's right.
You know, so it is, I will say, shortwave radio is probably one of the best-kept secrets as far as media is concerned that's ever existed.
Absolutely. And it may not resonate, if I could use that word, with my generation in North America. I don't know who's buying all the radios in North America, and like you say, there's obviously a market for them, or else Radio Shack wouldn't stock them. But think of a place like, Egypt. Right around the time when last year during the Arab Spring uprising, when they shut down the internet. They said, nope, this is too much. It's time to shut down the internet. Because, of course, everybody involved with that was communicating through Facebook. You know, how do you think they got word of what was happening around them, even 15, 20, 30 miles down the road when the telephones were shut down and the internet was shut down? Well, their only option really left is shortwave radio. Nobody outside of, either, you know, the old radio heads from who are older than me, who used to who are well aware of what shortwave can do. Nobody in my generation or younger gave any thought to that. I don't know. I don't know if it's a generational thing or whether it's we just don't have enough attention to devote to all of these different options of how to communicate, or whether, you know, the younger generation really cares as much anymore. But I'm really glad I found shortwave, and I think I'm going to stick with this because even though it keeps me up past my bedtime at night to my wife's disapproval, I like hearing what's going on in the world, and I hope to hear from you guys a lot more too. This is a great little program.
Let me do a quick station identification. This is WTWW, Lebanon, Tennessee, USA. Okay, we got that out of the way. I hear what you're saying, and I guess when I was talking earlier, we were talking about Voice of America shutting down, you know, all that kind of thing going on, and it being...
Have they actually shut down? Is that it?
Well, they took a wrecking ball to the one down there in Ohio, the Bethany, Ohio. They just tore it all to pieces, and then they've got that one, the towers, you'll see them on YouTube. I forget where that one was at. They just completely tore that thing down. What was it? Radio, it just escapes me. Yeah. Well, now they want to shut down Greenville. If they haven't shut that thing down yet, I know they shut down the one on the West Coast. And there was a nice YouTube video on that, too, that they were talking about. No, look, if it's ignorant, they want to do it. And if it makes sense, they're totally opposed to it. And, of course, the most economical way to spread the word and you know, people are curious about the United States, especially living in remote areas. They want to know about us and what we're doing, just like we want to know about them, you know. And the one thing that shortwave does is it crosses over all these government boundaries. It can go places that no one can go.
Well, you hit the nail on the head earlier when you said that the only entity that would have an interest in shutting down shortwave radio is a government, because what shortwave radio gives, what it allows somebody to do is a single entity, a single person, to broadcast their point of view across the globe, across a hemisphere, like you said. And that might not always be what they want. So whereas the internet, like we talked about just a minute ago, requires an infrastructure in order for it to function properly, it has checks and balances. you know, any old Joe Blow who can hire a team of 30 guys over the course of a couple months to go set up a transmitter and can afford to shovel coal into it and get a message out there can broadcast across the globe. And that's a pretty powerful thing in this day and age, given the way labor works now, given the you know, I'm sure dollar for dollar compared to the way it used to be, setting up an HF transmitter today is marginally cheaper than it used to be, please correct me if I'm wrong. There you go. You don't have to have this big fiber optic network to get your message out around the world. You can transmit, and you can tell people around the world who are interested in what you have to say, and without the restrictions that can be imposed on you by the internet.
You take an individual living, you know, in mainland China. They're dealing with the Chinese firewall, and the Chinese firewall is not letting things through. This is pretty selective. There's only certain things that could get through that firewall. So those folks are very eager to grab a battery-operated shortwave radio and tune around and listen and discover things that their government prevents them from hearing. You know, and I mean, I would imagine, I don't know how the Chinese firewall works. I don't know what gets through, what doesn't. All I know is it's been described as insidious. That's what I've heard. I guess I see that, and I think to myself, what a waste of opportunity when you have all those people that are there listening, and you have Texon making those 30,000 multi-band radios per day.
Yep.
You know,
per day,
and I, you know? The fella, he really hit me over the head with this thing when I said to him, I said, well, you know, where are all those radios going? You know, and he said, well, they go to India, they go to Africa. He said, there's a good portion, large portions of Russia, no electricity. Large portions of China, no electricity, you know. He said, and that's where these radios are going. And I said, wow. I said, well, that's an awful lot of people. And then he asks me the question in with his Chinese accent. He says, you have any idea how many people in China? You know, and I'd heard it quoted. I mean, I've seen it in print. But then it hit me. You know, this is a number that you really can't fathom.
There's, what, 1.5 billion people in China?
Yeah, you can't. Your brain can't go that high. You can't comprehend it. You know, I mean, so I don't know. And then the United States government says, even though Radio China International does a fantastic job broadcasting to the United States.
And I know a thing or two about production because what it takes to put on a good radio show. Every broadcaster knows what it takes to put on a good radio show. And if you've ever listened to Radio China, you know that they have shopped around to find the right mix of talent and production to get their message perfect. They know what they want to say, and they have hired the right people to go out and fill their broadcast day with quality programming. A lot of it is very carefully selected. Obviously, you know, the voice of China is the voice of their government. Nevertheless, the programming is of a variety that you know, at least gives you the sense that even though it's strictly controlled by the government, that there is an ear for some cultural depth that would draw listeners in to really
absolutely
want to listen. It's a great station. Again, like Radio Havana and any other radio station. And look, it's not just ex-bloc Soviet countries that you need to think about when you're listening to a shortwave radio. Every radio station that broadcasts from a point of view.
Well, you know, and I will say this, even though the news gets a bit absurd, there's some interesting things on Radio Havana, and they're definitely broadcasting for our benefit.
Of course, and that's the point, is that the listener has a responsibility to make a judgment about what it is that they're hearing, and incorporate that into every other piece of information that they're receiving, and then in order to make a decision for themselves about what the message is that they're willing to accept as their truth. But what shortwave? What I love about shortwave radio is with a twist of a dial, you can get all of these opinions at roughly the same time of the day, and go through four or five or six different radio stations, listen to what they have to say, especially on a subject that everybody's talking about. Like everybody's talking about the Middle East now. I'm sure everybody, at least a few people, will be talking about Whitney Houston. That'll be pretty big news. You know, whatever the topic of the day happens to be, you can get four or five, six different points of view, all on one little set. You know, you could do that from the internet, but the thing I'm finding wrong with the internet now is that there's too many voices. You can't filter through all the gobbledygook that if you do a little search on Google or something like that on a particular subject, you get too many hits, and you can't make an informed decision about what it is that you're hearing.
Oh yeah, it's very difficult.
There's just too many opinions. And shortwave radio, okay, that's what China says, that's what Russia says. What does Romania say? Okay, that's interesting. Geez, I wish I could hear from Canada, but Canada really doesn't have anything to say about that on shortwave. And I guess pretty soon the Voice of America won't either. That's too bad.
Well, I think they would do well to keep the shortwave stations on and not spend the $5 trillion to study the sex habits of the tsetse fly. Or something along that line. There's always some ridiculous program going on like that that makes no sense at all, that has nothing to do with the here and now. Listen, I want to thank you so much for calling. We got to move along, but I really have enjoyed hearing from you, your opinion.
And, I'd love to hear a program like this again, and I'm hoping you guys transmit something more like this on one of your other affiliates, because this is a great subject and a great discussion. And if I could make one last point, I think more than any other medium that I've listened to before, shortwave radio has given me quick access to important discussions that are worth listening to. Too many of these local AM radio stations, and I'm very hesitant to knock any medium in radio, because radio is really important, but you get locked into these commercial AM radio stations or these top 40 FM stations, and you're looking for that little glimmer of depth that's going to give you some insight into your day, and you're left empty-handed. And the first night I listened to shortwave radio, I just couldn't stop, because there was just so much good stuff to listen to that was worth listening to. And I'm so happy to have found this new hobby. But anyways, thanks a lot for the chit-chat. That was a great talk, and I'm going to keep listening.
All righty. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it.
And take care.
This is WTWW, and this is only a test. And you're listening on frequency 5085 kilohertz. You are invited to share the magic of HF broadcasting and amateur radio to a worldwide listening audience. Welcome. This is the QSO Radio Show. Give us a call now at 615-547-9520 and share with a huge global radio audience. That's 615-547-9520. And now, the QSO Radio Show with Ted Randall.
Hey, I want to say thank you to all the folks that have written emails and called and Twittered and went up on Facebook and did all those things. That's very cool. We want to thank you so very much for coming on board and being with us. And by the way, if you're listening and you're not near a computer, be sure and send us an email. Do that tonight or tomorrow. And just simply go to qsoradioshow.com and send us an email. Tell us where you're at, what you were listening on, and how we came in. And also put on there, I want to win, because we want you to win. We want you to win something. And who have I got on the phone with me here?
It's Mike Erickson from beautiful New Bern, North Carolina.
New Bern, North Carolina.
Yes.
And so how are we coming in there?
Oh, you're coming in full signal on my Grundig YB400. It's kind of funny. I was a friend of mine said, "Oh, Ted Randall's on the radio," so I take out my trusty radio and I put it on, and this old-time technology they call it, and here's Ted Randall. And so I try to talk to Ted Randall on my phone, and my phone doesn't want to work.
Well, now do
so
you
for modern technology?
Do you have the Cat 5 connector plugged into the radio all the way? I was thinking if it was only partially way in, that may be why your phone wasn't working.
Well, a lot of these new radios, I'm looking on my friend up in New York who's listening, Jack Cradiville. He's a disc jockey on Light FM in New York, and he's a big Grundig tech. And you know, he was just telling me about the new Grundig radios that have SD cards, and it's like, what?
Oh no!
So weird.
Wow.
Yeah, the new Grundig radios, they have SD cards, so you can record. You can record off the radio, and you can actually play your MP3s back on the radio. So it's a total. The thing's like about 2 inches thick.
Well, when will the RIAA send their cease and desist order on that thing?
Well, the thing is, the quality is probably going to be so poor at recording. It's probably going to be like, you know, 96 kbps MP3 stereo. So the quality.
Do you think those people have any quality consciousness about them at all?
No, not at all.
What I was going to do is let folks know this is Mike Erickson. Mike works for the Wheatstone Corporation, which is broadcast radio equipment, and I don't know what else you're into, but the most impressive thing that I've seen so far has been this audio processor that you guys have come up with. And I know you're part of the team that runs this thing, but for all you amateur radio audiophile freaks out there, you haven't seen anything until you've seen this Air Aura audio processor. Just absolutely the most incredible thing. So how are you doing with that, and how is that project coming along?
We're doing very well. We have now over 200 units in the field since it was launched. It was launched at NAB in 2010, and they started shipping in September of 2010. And there's over 200 in the field. It's been moving very well with our other two processing products, one of which, the VPA, which is a multi-mode processor that does AM, FM, and HD processing. A couple of amateur radio operators have actually purchased it for the use on the amateur bands. One's in Ohio, the gentleman in Ohio, and off the top of my head, I can't recall his call sign, but he bought one. He's very happy with it. And another friend of mine up on Long Island has a VP8, WA2FMQ in Northport, Long Island. So both of those gentlemen, have it, and they've put it on, and they've seen an increase in people they've been able to contact, especially during bad band conditions.
Now, I can imagine. The thing, audio processing is such a strange thing. In other words, we've gone through, years ago when they first came out with, the Optimod. Of course, I was around when Ed Budaba of WJR and CKLW fame put the very first multiband audio processor ever to be on a radio station and installed it at CKLW.
That's correct. And you had a front row view for that thing.
Yeah, and it was amazing because we drove around listening to that thing, and it was like it was like there was no way you couldn't describe it. It was like I'd never heard anything that sounded like that, because up until then it had all been single band processing. So all of a sudden now here's these kick drums coming through, and they're not interfering with the cymbals and all that. And I'm just amazed sitting there listening to that, because I remember we'd flip back over and I'd listen to, at the time it was Keener 13, and listen to Keener, and boy, it sounded like audio coming out of a box. Compared to CKLW. But then we went down the road, there was, Mike Durow, there was Greg Olganowski with the Greg processor, and all these different guys came out, then Bob Orban, and then Frank Fody with the Omnia and all that kind of stuff. And we went through all these, this whole, myriad of new audio inventions. I remember the first Omnia I ever heard, I think it was in New York City. And I couldn't figure out how they were getting that kind of brightness on FM, because the 8100 certainly wasn't going to go there. Although we did learn.
That,
go ahead.
That was on Z100. I believe that was Z100 you heard. That probably had the first Omnia.fm, or what's now known as the Omnia Classic.
We did learn that if you turn the XT chassis upside down, there was some potentiometers under there that you could tweak with, and you could actually make the 8100 pass high frequencies,
Yeah.
It took that telephone line sound away. But then, you know, then of course the Omnias came out, very aggressive audio processing with brilliant highs and all that. But it seems to me that, you know, and the program directors all want that. They want it to be smashed flat, hitting you in the face. And now it's got to where the record companies are using the audio processors, processors to master their music. So it's all just smashed flat, hitting you in the face. And then you guys came along with this thing. And what I was going to say is, what is so phenomenal, I've been doing this too long, can't talk now, about this box is it has the ability to actually uncompress smashed audio to some degree. And you can actually hear it do that.
Well, so one of the things we set out to do, I got there in the middle of the design of it. One of the things that we set out to do was to find ways for the audio processor to basically turn itself off and not process audio only when it needed to, rather than just have something that's constantly chasing the audio, that's constantly working on the audio. It has the ability to say, okay, I don't need to do anything right now because this is already squashed, and it's not totally passive. Of course, it always has to be some peak control, and even the most tightly peaked record goes in, and when it's EQ'd, you know, peaks are generated in the box. But the whole idea behind the processor is for it to find ways not to process rather than to trying to be processing all the time.
Well, you know, and I'll tell you something else that was we noticed immediately when we installed it on probably one of the biggest problem stations I've ever worked at in terms of signal, getting the signal into town uninterrupted, because there are so many hills in Middle Tennessee. You know, it's like multi-path city. We noticed this processor lowered significantly multi-path problems. And I'm going to ask you, how does it do that? I mean, it's real. I mean, you can hear it. It actually affects the multipath, and it takes the multipath down sometimes completely out of the picture, where before in that particular location in town, the multipath was unbearable.
Well, there's two ways we do that. One, we have a sum and difference mixer out of the front end of our processor, and what that allows you to do is it allows you to raise the L minus R content only in specific frequencies that are very sensitive for the human ear. So rather than doing a broadband stereo enhance, you can set our box to do a stereo enhance between maybe 800 and 3K rather than raising the whole L minus R spectrum. That helps a lot, keep the L minus R down a lot while still enhancing what the listener will easily perceive when listening in the car. The other is we have an L minus R stereo width limiter all the way in the back end by our stereo generator. And instead of being affixed on some processors in the past and on some of our boxes in the past, there was a button you'd push where you could have, you know, full stereo or a 3 dB reduction in stereo separation or a 6 dB. And those were fixed controls. Our stereo width limiter is a dynamic control that is constantly monitoring the L minus R content and is able to let L minus R escape, quote unquote, when it needs to, but never allows it to become excessive.
It's amazing. It really is. Well, tell me, what other kind of gadgets are you involved in there? I'd like to know.
We do mic processing, and we're doing some processing in our services. We also take care of some of that. We have some of our digital consoles have compressors and AGCs and mic processors and EQs and DSers and everything built in. So we take care of those too. We make presets for people. They'll send me one of the best things about, you know, having a facility like we have, where we have, you know, our processors on a transmitter and everything in a closed lab, is that we can take someone's preset and they'll say, well, I want a little more of this and a little more of that, and I can give it to them, hear how it plays, and then I can just email them the preset back and they can put it on the air.
Well, that's really interesting. I know that one thing that this thing does is it has the ability to automatically switch from either an analog input to a AES input.
Yes.
And can it ping pong back and forth? I mean, can it actually sense when there's something missing and go to the other one, or how does that work?
Well, what it would do is if you lost your analog, if say you're your main mode was analog and you had the auto sensing checked. If you lost your analog, it would switch over to the digital, but it would, if your analog came back, it would wait about, I think it's about 30 seconds, and then it segues back into the analog and makes sure that the analog is back and that it's stable before it switches back to the analog. And if your main was the digital and you lost the digital, it would do the same thing in reverse.
Well, I had the chance to meet Mike as he came into town and had a lot of real interesting discussions. And along with that, his wife, Stephanie. How's Stephanie doing? And tell us a little bit about y'all's radio background, what all you've done.
Oh, well, before I worked for Wheatstone, I spent 15 years in New York at CBS Radio. I was one of the staff engineers for WFAN. A lot of people probably listening to the show have DX'd the fan, as they called it, more than once. I was there for 12 years. My last 3 years, I was the chief engineer at WCBS-FM, which was a huge thrill for me. As you know, speaking from the CKLW days and speaking about the old-time radio disc jockeys, but being able to work with some of these guys who, you know, worked for years in New York City. And I thought I had lost my opportunity to do that in 2005 when CBS-FM went away for 2 years, when it was Jack FM, and then they brought the format back in 2007. Working with the guys in New York, Ron Parker, Broadway Bill Lee, Bob Shannon, Dan Taylor, Don K. Reed, who did some weekend shifts, Pat St. John, who worked at CKLW.
Oh, yeah.
And is on the CKLW, the 2020 News, 2020 News tribute on the CKLW. He's sitting there doing the, it's 2 o'clock. This is Grant Hudson. You know, it's really, it was a thrill working with them. But the opportunity to do processing every day and not have to commute to New York City was just too sweet to pass up. And, you know, I'm glad I came down, and I'm glad I'm doing this. And to be able to, you know, show people equipment and they get excited about it and they're passionate about it, it's really cool.
Well, did you ever, I mean, you were in the Detroit area. And when I was in Detroit, we talked to each other on the telephone across town.
That's right.
And I mentioned to you that WOMC, that oldie station up there, is in desperate need of one of those processors. Did you ever get them to try one of those things out?
We've actually been talking with them, and I'm supposed to be in Detroit in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually going to Seattle, and then because we're putting in a whole bunch of mic processors in Seattle radio station, and then I'm supposed to fly to Detroit to see my friend Dom Theodore, who has a station up in Cadillac, Michigan, and on that Monday I'm hoping to stop by and shake some hands at CBS in Detroit there and see if we can sit down and talk about doing a demo. And then it's going to be, I'm supposed to, after that, go up by car to Toronto. We're supposed to see some people. So it's going to be a busy couple weeks coming up.
Oh, you ever get in there. If you ever get them to put one of those things in and try it, I guarantee you their program director will have a lock and chain around it, and they'll probably have an armed guard stationed right near the box, lest anyone thinks they're going to remove it. So it's just, you know. Well, you know, I think one of the things is that Detroit radio has been graced with some stations. It's had decent audio in the past, you know, and I think folks there, you know, they're a little bit more critical, you know, in terms of what they're hearing. And some of the stuff, especially an oldie station, that's really a tough format, you know, to make it sound great. You know, it's just really tough.
It is. I mean, when you listen to oldies 20 years ago, you know, the 50s and 60s music, there were some, you know, it had that rough, you know, early rock and roll sound, and you could set a processor to play 50s and 60s music and get everything kind of consistent. Now that you're playing 60s music with 70s and 80s music, when you've introduced the Aphex Oral Exciter and all these other recording techniques that were introduced in the 70s and 80s, now you've got a big problem because the Mamas and the Papas and, you know, George Michael and Wham sound like two totally different recording.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like going from a live performance to a telephone line.
Exactly.
And whatever it is in the line has got to be, you know, cognizant of that. Well, you know, okay, when CBS, they left the oldies format, they went to the Jack format, everybody was, you know, going, ah, the Jack format, that's it, this is it. So I understand from what I heard now, that there was total rebellion in the city. People were just like, you know, give us our oldies back. You know, what were you there during that time, or did you hear about that or witness any of that?
Oh, definitely. I was still at FAN during that time, and FAN is co-owned with CBS FM. And there were rallies in front of, they were at the time, they were at, in the Viacom building in Times Square, where MTV used to have their ground level studios, where they used to do Total Request Live, I think was the name of the show. And CBS FM was on the 40th floor. And there were all sorts of rallies out front. You know, there was a hearse people brought up with the CBS logo on the side. I mean, it really, a lot of people, you know, it really, really got to a lot of people, because this was more than a radio station. It was a friend, it was a companion. I mean, some of the greatest names ever to be on the air, Ron Lundy, Harry Harrison, Dan Ingram, you know, all had shows there and were loved. And the station had good ratings. Even when they blew it up, it had good ratings. It wasn't billing like it used to, and of course that's the big deal nowadays. But the JAG format totally tanked, and their billing dropped in half the next year. And when Dan Mason came back, and Dan's you talk about these radio executives and you know what they do and where they come from. Dan is one of the few that actually came from the microphone side of broadcasting and not the sales department. And he realized the value of the brand and brought it back.
We got a question here for you.
Sure.
This is from, I believe it's WQ3Y, Shane in Maryland. It says, awesome signal. Listening to your guest from Wheatstone. What about the new DSPs?
Okay. What about... What does he want? Does he have a specific question, or what about the new DSP?
That's all I've got here. I assume that you would know what to say.
the big thing with DSP and processing is getting all this stuff in the box and keeping the latency down. There's a lot of people out there saying latency doesn't matter anymore, you know, because HD and, you know, people aren't listening off the air in real time. And, you know, whenever you go to a customer and, you know, they ask what the latency is. If you tell them 30, 40 milliseconds, they give you this look like, you know, you have three heads. You tell them you got a latency of 9 to 12 milliseconds, they can live with it. Most about it is stability, and most of these systems are built on Linux. It's the stability of the operating system and how the software works with it, that there's no problems. You know, you're not rebooting the box once a week because it's locked up, or, you know, it's just not freezing up on the air and you get the last bit of data just playing blah, 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 back and forth. It's just basically about stable audio, stable operation, keeping the latency down, and being able to really put into the processor and do things in what we have now that were only dreams in analog, that you would need, you know, a box that was almost a full rack to do, in a full rack's worth in analog that you can do now in one RU and digital.
Wow. Well, Mike, listen, we're kind of run out of time, is what it amounts to. But it's been good. It's been good talking to you, and I'm glad that the signal's doing well up there. And also your friend,
I think
your friend, I guess you said, in Long Island, that's also listening.
My friend Jack on Long Island. Yeah, he's a big. He says, he texts me. He's like, he's mentioning Texan. Oh, I'm listening on a Texan.
Well, I thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again here sometime soon when you're in our.
I'm hoping to get out to Nashville. You know, on a way back from some trip, I can stop in Nashville for the weekend and then, you know, jet home on a Sunday.
There you go. Well, tell Stephanie we all said hello, and we thank you so much for calling in. And it's been a very, very interesting conversation, but we kind of got to put the lid on it. So, anyways, I thank you so much, and you have a good evening and a good weekend.
Thank you very much.
Okay. This is WTWW. That's about wrapping this up. Now, let me mention this: if you've missed a portion of this show and you want to hear it, we are going to repeat the show on the stream. So, if you go to QSOradioshow.com. There's links right in there, right on the front page. You just click on one of those links, and you'll be able to to listen to the thing all over again. Matt's handing me something here, and I'm going to let you interpret this for me, sir, before
this,
we go
this
on.
This is a bunch of close. This is a bunch of people here from Facebook that wrote in. Just real quick, if you want to go down this list and just say hello to them real quick, and if you want to read their quick reports. So we just grabbed the last few that just came in just so that everyone could get a quick mention. And by the way, if you haven't joined us on Facebook or Twitter, go to our website, tedrandall.com. They are both up there. Basically, it's just QSO Show. We would definitely appreciate a join there. And, Ted, I'm going to let you go through these real quick, and then I think we're probably going to give Dave a call back at the transmitter and get a report from him and kill this thing.
Okay. We're gonna call Dave back?
Yeah.
Okay. Hang on here. Well, let me get you this phone so you can dial him back. And we want to say hello to Shane Wolf. I believe it's Chris Ishmael. I hope I'm saying this right. Richard. And Richard's... I believe this may be the fellow that just called us from Honduras. I'm not sure. But his last name is P-A-C-H-E, and I would hate to try to pronounce that and then blow it. Joel Stanley. Tim Rato. He's in Luther, Iowa. Mark Meese. Where does it say Mark is, or does it say where he's at? Don't know where he's at. Michael Demita, I believe. Yeah, Mike Erickson's friend. I'm not so sure. He's in Florida. Lloyd Colston is listening. Michael Barrett is listening in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Let's see here. Fritz Prentice, Guy McDonald. In Savannah, Georgia. The other fellow's in Star City, Arkansas, I do believe. Omaha, Nebraska, Ray Myers, and Art Oddly. And he is in Southern Maryland, all reporting great signals on this here radio station. And with me on the phone, hello there. Well, are the squirrels tired of running in
these
the cage?
Squirrels are tired, and they are still running, so I'm going to have to run after them.
Okay. Well, we're going to play, after we get done talking to you, we're going to play one song, and then we'll start the rewind on our stream. So tell me, how did it go tonight out there?
It went very well. We found a couple of little surprises, but nothing substantial. We had a real good time. The squirrels had a really good time. I think they're still running, and it doesn't look like they want to slow down. But
well, tell me
if
something.
If I don't catch them, they're going to be pretty mad because I haven't fed them either.
When you took us off the air and came back on, what were y'all doing?
Well, we had a little surprise, and I was just kind of curious if we had some problems with the water that was in this thing. So what we did is we took it down for a couple of minutes. We drained out a little bit of the water to have a look and see if there was any garbage in it. And we didn't find much. We did find a little bit, so we got that out of there.
Well, you know, what folks don't understand, too, and that is that the cooling of these transmitters is done by water. So when you look inside, you'll see things that looks like garden hose.
Yeah, this thing takes a tremendous amount of cooling.
And you've got big capacitors that have hoses going to them.
Yeah.
You have water going through the jacket where the tube is, and a big water pump that circulates all this. And the water has to be filtered by a nuclear-grade resin to make sure that it has no conductivity whatsoever.
This thing is big enough that you actually have cooling water that is inside some of the coils to keep them good and cool. So, you know, that's something that you really cannot imagine if you've had a ham rig to deal with over the years. And then you've got a lot of other fun things that can happen. You know, a lot of hams, they don't think too much about running a kilowatt or a kilowatt and a half. But when you get up to this power level, you can't always use a beam because then you have corona problems. The ends of the antennas sometimes have so much voltage on them that they will just absolutely disintegrate.
Oh, yeah, and you'll get corona discharge. Well, just a quick story. I recall at one of the shortwave stations George was at, I showed up one night, an old fellow there by the name of Roland Wolf. what a character, great fella. And he said to me, he said, you know, George has installed a speaker way out in the field down there by the river. You know, I said, a speaker? He said, yeah, listen. I put my head out the window, and there was some preacher's voice just barreling up from the river, you know, just loud, you know. I thought, I could hear this, and I looked real close, and I could see there was a line arc way down there, you know. And that line arc was just, you know, modulating the air molecules, and up it was coming. It sounded like the voice of God down there coming up off the river. He was convinced that George had put a speaker down there.
Yeah, we had one day that I heard such a thing, and it wasn't too long that, you know, one of the wires decided to drop off of the antenna. It had gotten so hot, it just, you know, burned itself in two.
No, that's when you're working at that power level, there's all sorts of weird anomalies that take place. I remember coming up the driveway and hearing a voice or a sound of a voice coming out of a paper cup in the cup holder in the vehicle, you know, and you kind of wonder then, you know.
Yeah.
The sound of a voice coming out of a washing machine tub, you know. I mean, there's all kinds of anomalies like this, hearing sound come out of a fence.
Yep.
You know, going, you know, so there's...
I'll tell you one from way back. I was in a studio one night in the production room, and I turned the speakers up because I heard something. And as it turns out, the propagation was such that night that it was Radio Africa, Radio South Africa, and their bird call that they used to do that was coming in over the studio monitors. And this was in a shielded room.
Oh, yeah. Skip. Turning just right, ionosphere, just in the right position. Well, sir, if you don't have any parting remarks,
I think I'd better not say anything. I think the squirrels are just about to get tired, and they're going to get mad if they don't get fed. So I'd better go and do something about them.
All right. Well, thank you much, Dave. We'll talk to you a little later, sir.
Have a good night.
You've been listening to a broadcast. Basically, we've called it This Is Only a Test. We appreciate your participation in it. We ask you to go to the website, which is simply qsoradioshow.com. Shoot us an email. Join us on Facebook and on Twitter if you can. And then I do want to say, be sure and write on that email, I want to win, because we want you to win. And other than that, I want to say goodnight. We have one parting song. Well, we will put this in rewind on the stream if you'd like. If you've missed the beginning and you want to hear the whole thing, well, just click on the website and go to one of the streaming icons and you'll be able to hear it. 73, good night, everyone. This is Ted Randall, WB8PUM with QSO Radio Show. Matt here to my right. And we really appreciate your patronage of this broadcast. Matt, KG4WXX, and 73, and good night to all.